Well, we have started a series called True Spirituality. The concept behind it is, how do we find if it's real, or is it just something we're going along with, something we got, sucked into one way or the other by parents, by somebody else? Is it really real, or is it something that's just kind of painted on the outside? So our first deal is freedom from the bondage of sin. It comes down to this, that if you are still in bondage to sin — now this doesn't mean that there's ever a time in our life when we're sin free, except for a few minutes at a time maybe, but it does mean that we shouldn't be in bondage, that there is always the way out. So that's a key concept in this idea of finding, is it real? So the basic considerations, the first basic consideration is the law and the law of love. We looked last time at becoming a Christian. We looked tonight at being a Christian. Birth, obviously, is an important beginning, but it is just a beginning. As with physical birth, our new birth is at once the most important part and the least important part of our life. It's most important because we would have no life without it. But it's least important because all of life develops after that. So, we dare not, once we become saved, we dare not allow the thought, well, now that's done. Now that's over. This is just the beginning. This is just the new birth. So, what should we think? Well, there's a poor way to advance, and that is, I will advance by following a list of thou shalt nots. So I'm not going to smoke and drink, and won't go with the girls that do, and all that kind of stuff. A rich way to advance, opposite of poor, the rich way to advance is to grow and develop. So true spirituality, when it's real, is a positive, not merely a negative set of negatives. To conceive of the Christian life as a set of taboos. Do you know the word taboo? Things we're not supposed to do. Is to relegate that to just your average human religion. Human religion comes up with a list of things that thou shalt not, or thou shalt. Yet, here's a little bit of a problem. When you hear those who rage against a list of taboos, you may say, well, they've got it right. They're trying to be positive. They don't want you falling into this negative concept of it's just a list of things you can't do. The problem with that is they may be actually arguing against having any restrictions upon their will. That's not okay. That's not Christian. It's anti-Christian. So, grow as a Christian. Grow, but grow as a Christian. Develop your new Christian life by grasping the value of God's instructions. So the law is not a path to salvation. But once we're saved, God's law is a revelation of what he expects, what he would like to see in us, how he would like to see us develop as a child of God. We are to be conformed to the image of Christ. We as adopted children are to be conformed to the image of the natural child. So, how do we understand that? Back when God's law was only one commandment with Adam and Eve, it was given in love. Genesis 2:17. But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it. For I will be so upset, I'll bang you around, throw you against a tree, and I'll... No. Out of love, he says, don't eat of that, for in the day thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. That's the warning of love. Adam and Eve decided that they would doubt God, that they would move out of self-love instead of submissive love, and they sinned. And so they took along all of their children that they would ever have. And that's you and me. And they began to die, and old age is the warning sign of approaching death. Watching a magician on TV, and they have this love for put in a straitjacket. And then they work and they work and they sweat and they struggle and they finally get out of the straitjacket. I thought, well, you know, I have trouble getting out of my T-shirt. Especially if I got sweaty and it's sticking to me, and I have to work about that long just to get out of that. So, you know, I find old age reminding me that death is coming. And all came because of sin. So recognize that God's laws are not, never have been, a path to salvation. Never their intent. But they are a path to a wiser and healthier life. It's the two ways that the wise writer of Proverbs talks about. There's the good path, the high path, the high way that keeps you away from the other things. Then there's the other path that leads into the pits, the thorn snares. Not a nice thing. So those are the two paths. The one is the path that I give in to self, and it takes me in dangerous places. The wise path is a narrow path. It's the path of God, and it is described in His law. God's love is behind every law. We need to understand this. How come He tells me I can't do this stuff? Because He loves you. And He sees farther down the road than you can see. The child who is chasing after the ball will run into the street. The parent who knows what the street represents will warn them not to do that. Excuse me. Let me illustrate this because we're dealing with God's law. But Matthew 22:37-40, Jesus said unto him, in answer to the question, what's the greatest commandment? Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart. In our study of the love of God, we've seen that this word love carries with it the idea of loving service. Grandma gets a visitor. Loving service, that is, in love, wanting to give yourself to the loved one. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And then he says, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Made me think of the mobiles. You seen those? There's a single line that comes down, and then there's a branch that comes out, and there's two things hanging on that. And then from that, lines come down, and those branch out, until you could have this wide variety of things all moving around on the mobile. But if you follow it all back, it comes back to the original two. Love the Lord, love your neighbor. And the thing that they have in common, the single thread that hangs it all, is love. Learning to love God, learning to love fellow man. So, when we are irritated by others, we might ask, why should I love my neighbor? Am I my brother's keeper? You've heard that before, right? Cain, where's your brother? It's not my time to watch him. I'm not his keeper. In the final analysis, we love our fellow humans, and especially our brothers and sisters in Christ, because we love and serve God. And he told us to love them. What's all this about loving our fellow man? It's something that my father told me to do. Why do you obey him? Because I love him. Our Christian cross, our symbolic cross, has a strong upright. It's grounded in reality, and it's pointing straight up to God, and it says, love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. That's what we erect in our life, the love of God. Then we find that he says, now based on my love, I want to add this part that goes this way, the horizontal bar, and it's kind of like pointing on either side of you. And he says, based on your love of me, love others. Love your neighbor. So, he asks me to love others as he loved me. See, he's not asking you to do anything that he doesn't do. So, I can't resist his loving request. He saved me by the unthinkable sacrifice of his beloved son. So there's nothing he can ask me that I wouldn't do. So his command directs me to love my fellow sons of God and even my persecuting enemies. Romans 14:15. But if thy brother be grieved with thy meat, what you're eating, now walkest thou not charitably. The Greek, according to charity, according to love. You're not walking according to love. And that's the standard, you see. Destroy not him with thy meat, for whom Christ died. Love him as Christ did. 1 Corinthians 8:12-13. But when you sin so against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. See how that's tied together? Wherefore, if meat, what you eat, makes my brother to offend, I, Paul says, will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. I would rather become a vegetarian. Yay, a vegan. If that would help my brother even then not offend. So God is love. We know this. 1 John 4:8-16. He that loveth not knoweth not God. Why? For God is love. Verse 16, we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. So let me try to recast this whole concept that we've been told about being godly. Be holy. Now, if being holy makes you think of some sour-faced, grumpy person that says, you're not good enough, you've mistaken what holiness is. To be godly, we must become godlike. God is love. We must become love. God love is self-sacrifice for the good of others. We say it's not about us. This is growth. This is spiritual growth. This is obeying the law of God. Listen to Christ, John 13, verse 34, John 15, verse 9 and 12. Hear his voice talking to his disciples. A new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another. It's the summation commandment, you see. He's taken them above the details into the principle behind it all. That you love one another as I have loved you, that you love also love one another. There's the standard. He's not telling us to do something that he's not willing to do. In fact, that he hasn't already done. Over to chapter 15, verses 9 and 12. For as the Father hath loved me, so he's passing it on, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. You see how that works? This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Again, in 1 John chapter 4, verses 11 and 19, beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. That's why we do that. We love him because he first loved us. We are a reflection of his love. We've been born anew in his image, and the love of God has been shed abroad or poured out abundantly into our heart. So, with this, I want you taking you above the details into the principle, the background principle of all of this, and understand then that true spirituality must ultimately be an inward development. It is not just an outward submission to a list of rules, however good those rules might be. Now we can come back to this and notice that the clue to this concept of inward development is found in the Ten Commandments. You say, well, that I thought they were all outward things, you know, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not speak wrong with your mouth. But listen to the Tenth Commandment. The Tenth Commandment, Exodus 20, verse 17. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, nor shall they covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant. Today that would be his automatic appliances, his car, you know. Nor his ox, nor his ass. That's how he gets to work. Those are his woodworking tools. Can't covet those. Nor anything that is thy neighbor's. When it's repeated in Deuteronomy 5:21, neither shalt thou desire thy neighbor's wife, nor shalt thou covet thy neighbor's house, his field, or his manservant, or maidservant, his ox, ass, anything that is thy neighbor's. Now, analyze this with me. This commandment forbids an entirely inward attitude. Do you see that? Now, Paul saw that. I want you to notice how this one, out of all the other 10, struck conviction into Paul's heart. He was raised as a Pharisee, the Jews. All strict law keeping. But this one got him in the heart. Listen to Romans 7, 7 to 9. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? He's saying it's not a path to salvation, but is it sin? Is law keeping sin? No, God forbid. Nay, and he realizes this, he reveals this, I had not known sin but by the law. The law made me aware of sin in me. For I had not known lust. The King James gives us this explanatory word, concupiscence. So if you didn't know what lust was, concupiscence should explain that for you. I had not known lust, except the law had said, thou shalt not covet. He said, I found sin not just a thing that I might do, but something that lived in my heart. Verse 8, but sin, taking occasion by the commandment, wrought in me all manner of concupiscence. Lust. For without the law, sin was dead. When I wasn't told I couldn't do it, I didn't have any problem. I did it and didn't care. For I was alive without the law once. But when the commandment came, sin revived and I died. I thought I was pretty holy. Hadn't stabbed anybody. Hadn't committed adultery. Then I found out I was full of lust for other people's stuff. And I died. Sin revived, I died. I thought I had sin on the run. Then I got to the 10th commandment. We need to understand this, that Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount gave us examples of three of the other of the 10 commandments to teach us precisely this, that God's law was essentially inward and not mere outward ritual. How often in the Old Testament do the prophets rail against the Israelites who were keeping all the rituals? They were doing all the right actions. And he says, but their heart is far from me. What was he after? The heart, the inward. Look with me at Matthew 5, 21. Jesus said, you have heard that it was said by or to them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. He says, but what does God really trying to say in this? Verses 22 to 26. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, King James margin adds, that is vain fellow, empty head, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. That's the inward attitude expressed with your words, demeaning the person. He says that violates, thou shalt not kill. Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar. The ritual giving is not as important as your relationship to God. Leave the gift, go make things right with your brother. First be reconciled to thy brother, then come and offer thy gift. The worship act is of no good, no consequence, no importance to God or man if your heart's not right. Agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge deliver thee to the officer, be cast into prison. Verily I say unto thee, thou shalt no means come out thence till thou hast paid the uttermost farthing. He says, this is what God says, thou shalt not kill. He introduces in front of you a road that goes two ways. If you go to the bad side, you're going toward killing, murder, taking life. So he says, step onto that road, but go the other way. We're getting a signal. It's Morse code. Turn the other way and go toward life toward the enhancement of life rather than taking a life. You see it? Again, thou shalt not commit adultery. Matthew 5, 27. You've heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. So he explains it. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in the heart. It was the inward thing. So you may choose to lust, but that choice is sin, and it has put you on the road of adultery. Adultery might be several steps on down the road, but you've already taken steps toward that place. So what does he say? Turn the other way. Go the positive way. If thy right eye offend thee or cause thee to offend, pluck it out, cast it from thee, for it's profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish. He's not talking literally here, because what guarantee against lust is losing an eye? If you still have one eye, you can still look with lust, you see. So he's talking about something as valuable to you as your eye. And not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. If thy right hand offend thee, cut it off, cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not thy whole body should be cast into hell. It has been said, and here he goes to the sacred thing of the liberal world, divorce. It has been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, that's the word for divorce, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery. So just don't go that way. Go the other way. Go to that which is positive toward marriage. The third example, with this I close. Thou shalt not bear false witness. He says, again you have heard that it has been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oath. Don't lie. Don't be a false witness. Now, they had it settled. Okay, I don't speak a lie. He said, but it's deeper than that. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea. If you say yes, you mean yes. Nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than this cometh of evil. So what he's talking about here is the way around lying. And they said, I promise, but they had their fingers crossed. They could say, I'll swear by the throne of God, they had to keep it. But if I swear by the gold of the throne, they didn't have to keep it. Now, I just made that up, but it was something like that. There was a way out. So the person that didn't know, you could lie to them and say, I swear by my mother's toenails. And they'd say, well, that's pretty serious for swearing, see. But they knew, ha-ha, it doesn't mean anything, so I can lie to them. So, being a Christian is not law-keeping. It is growth in God. But looking to God's law, which tells us the details of loving, and allowing it to speak inwardly to us. Primarily, true spirituality is inside. And so it is an inward development. That is Christian growth. It's not just keeping track how many times you came to church. It is not just how many people you witnessed to, how many tracts you passed out. Those are part of the whole thing, but it's not the outward things. It's why, I love this Ephesians 4:12, where he talks about what the purpose of the church is. He says at the end of this, at the end of this, they should be serving the Lord, helping to build the body of Christ. But the purpose of the church is not to get them to do that. The purpose of the church is to get them mature enough that they want to bring them to perfection, to bring them to a maturity level where they know how and can do it and they want to. So my job, pastor of the church, is to instill in you a holy desire for inward spiritual growth. You can only do that if you really got saved. But convincing it is that you are saved when you see, in fact, you're making progress. Brother Jeb has said, he looks around in his life and says, I am not where I wish I was. But I'm glad to say I'm not where I used to be. You know, that's the definition of progress. You've grown. You've grown. Did you ever do that growing up, or is it just boys? I don't know. Where you see how tall you are. You reach up and touch the top of the doorway, and jump up and touch the ceiling, and all these little marks you see. And I say, hey, I've grown. I've grown. Didn't notice it day by day, but I've grown. That's what we need in the Christian life. I don't have the trouble with that I used to have. I've conquered that problem of sin. Comments or questions?